your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Really excited to welcome Whitney Beatty. She's the CEO of Josephine and Billy's. Whitney, great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me on today, Jeff.
Excellent. Well, Whitney, you know, I was reading all sorts of articles about you, and, you know, that's what prompted me to reach out because I'm like, I got to get her on the show. She's doing great stuff.
Don't believe those lies. I'm a good person.
So I'm thankful for you to come on and, you know, jump on Alchemy just because we have so many amazing guests who have come on the show and, you know, talk to us about their stories. And I think your story is fantastic. So before we even dig in, quick background on you, amazing career on the entertainment side. You know, you were a producer, you know, you worked in the development side, you were SVP of development for Warner Brothers. So you come from, you know, the world of entertainment and TV. Now you are, you know, the CEO of Josephine and Billy's. So, well, for one, let's just kick off the show like that. How did that happen? What was that moment that you said, I'm going to go into weed?
It's wild and it's crazy. Well, anybody who's worked in the entertainment industry will tell you, it'll drive you to weed. Actually, it's a weird transition. So it's odd because I did not grow up using cannabis. I grew up in Detroit in the 80s. Nancy Reagan told me to say no to drugs. I believed her. I didn't know that there was a reason for Nancy Reagan to lie to me.
You remember, by the way, I was born in the 70s and I saw those ads too as I was a kid.
How many times do you remember? Your brain's going to fry like an egg. I'm like, they scared the shit out of us.
Whitney, what about the other one? Did you see the one with the dad? And where did you get this from? He's, Dad, I got it
from watching you.
I'm like, wait, that was my life growing up. My dad had weed and I used to take his stuff, but he never yelled at me about it.
See, like, I'm like, those are the things that scared me, you know, growing up. And so I didn't do it. When I was growing up, really. And then I came out to Los Angeles. I was working in the entertainment industry and I had a situation where I was, you know, I was trying to work my way up within the industry. And I came up on the traditional sense. I worked at William Morris Agency as an agency assistant. You know, I put in, you know, a million hours for approximately $2 a week, you know, stressing myself out, trying to become a big, you know, development executive. Mm-hmm. And at one of my first gigs as a director of development. So I'm on my way and I'm sitting at my desk and I'm starting to have heart palpitations and I have a cold sweat and my heart is skipping beats and I'm having chest pains and I think I'm having a heart attack. I thought I was dying. But I was too scared that if I told everybody, it would mess up production. I'd be embarrassed. And so I figured I would just drive myself to the hospital and die there alone, like a good executive would. So I got into the car and drove myself to UCLA Medical Center, parked my cars where the ambulance is parked. Because they'll tow my car away and you don't need a car when you're dead. And I went in and told them I was having a heart attack. And they rushed me back to the EKG machine and they hooked me up and they said, lady, you're not having a heart attack. You're having an anxiety attack. Right. And I'm like, run that again because I am a type A winner and we don't have anxiety. Right. and that really changed the game for me because I had to figure out a way to deal with that anxiety. And the doctors started prescribing me this and prescribing me that. And I didn't like any of it. I'm like, I'm way too young to start taking medicine for the rest of my life. How am I going to deal with this?
But was the anxiety all work related?
Hell like- yeah. I mean, I was stressed out.
Yeah.
And I was living off of Red Bulls and free espresso from the espresso machine. Right. I'm like, lucky my face hadn't exploded yet.
Oh my God.
So my doctor in an offhand comment said, have you tried cannabis? Mm-hmm. And for me, again, as a kid who grew up in the middle of the war on drugs, born in 78, she could have said to me, you know, have you tried heroin? Because for me, drugs was drugs. And I was like, have I tried cannabis? It's like she blew my mind. But what she did was she made me have to do my homework. And that was on two parts. She made me have to learn about the plant. And so I looked up, you know, cannabis, THC, CBD, the entourage effect. And I learned about cannabis as a whole, but more importantly, maybe why I felt so negatively about it. Why do I have this stigma? And I learned about the war on drugs, and I learned about going from 40,000 Black men in prison to 500,000 Black men in prison. And I learned about Harry Anslinger, who was responsible for prohibition and who said things like, reefer makes darkies think they're as good as white men. And the thick layer of racism that came with, prohibition and all of these things. And it really changed the game for me on cannabis. And as I started using cannabis, I started looking into the industry and the opportunities there. And eventually I started to use cannabis on a regular basis. And I realized that I was doing the thing that a lot of new parents did, which is I was hiding cannabis from myself because I didn't want my kid to get into it and my dog to get into it. So I'd put, the weed over here on the top of this shelf, and I'd put the grinder over here and the pipe over there, and I was playing a game of hide and go seek with myself.
And then you couldn't find anything.
No, of course not. And by the time I found it, it was dried up, like dust. It was very embarrassing. And I wanted a place to keep my cannabis together. I kept my wine in a wine fridge. I kept liquor in a bar. I kept cigars in humidors. I was keeping my high-end cannabis in shoe boxes under my bed. That didn't make sense to me. And so eventually I quit my job, sold my house, and started a company called Apothecary Brands that made high-end humidors for cannabis consumers.
Love it.
Beautiful luxury humidors. And I started that company back in 2015. And the rest was kind of history. I started that, went through the Canopy Business Accelerator with that, came out, pitched at the ArcView Investor Network, and started my round. And was like off like lightning, and have been in this space ever since.
I love it. Well, that's a great story, minus a little bit of at the, anxiety attacks. But I kind of feel like we all go through that when we're kind of in the height of whether it's a startup or we're building out something crazy or we're just doing a million things. I kind of feel like there was a point too, back in 2007 when I started Buddy Media, like 6 months in, we were just going crazy. And I thought I was having a heart attack too. And I did go to my doctor and did a whole EKG. And he's like, dude, it's nothing too. But I know that feeling. And I know that feeling of fear, right? So it's like, sometimes we just need to like calm the hell down and just chill. And I kind of feel like, I love that you found cannabis, right? I've also found cannabis for my own use cases, which is purely sleep related because my brain does not turn off and I don't want to be taking Ambien. But I do find that taking like a nice indica at night, like an edible, it's like, it's my medicine, right?
And
it's
exactly. Great
because exactly. I literally will take it. I'll get into bed. I'll be on email and on my phone. And then I start getting like, my eyes get heavy and I'm like, good night. It's a perfect kind of like, decline.
It's a wind down.
It's a wind down. Exactly. It's like, it's not like something you just take and it happens 2 seconds later. You got a good half hour. So I love stories like that. Now I was reading that Jay-Z invested in your business. And so I definitely wanted to ask you about that. What's the story? How did it come about? Has it had any impact on your business? Talk to us about that.
So that's another funny story. So I
love your stories.
I'm like, so Apothecary Brands is going strong and Los Angeles opens up the social equity program. Social equity is the idea that communities of color who've been disproportionately disenfranchised by the war on drugs deserve prioritization and legalization. And I qualified for social equity in Los Angeles. So I applied for that program and I had this idea for a dispensary that focused on women of color. Because what I knew for sure is that, while women are known to be more stressed than men, and women of color are one of the most stressed cohorts out there. And I really wanted to be able to offer education on the plant and make it easier than ever for people to get that in communities of color. And that is kind of where the idea for Josephine and Billy's was born. Josephine and Billy's is a dispensary named after Josephine Baker and Billie Holiday, two women of color who were persecuted for their cannabis consumption. And yet they used their art to fight against injustice. They rejected the mainstream and they kind of wrote their own rules, all while holding the door open for other women who'd come after them. And for us, that is goals AF. So I partnered with my business partner, Ebony Anderson, and we set about putting together this concept. And after, lots of roller coasters of ups and downs, and people, you know, I had a VC partner that fell out. That was actually what ended up having me partner with my business partner. I was like, okay, I kind of need to, and they fell out at the top of COVID. And I was like, I need money in order to get this project going. I need money. And I kind of need it like yesterday, emergency style. And I heard that the parent company, which is this amalgamation of a few companies that came together, Left Coast Ventures, Monogram, which is Jay-Z's company, and Roc Nation, Caliva, and Subversive Capital were coming together, and they had this social equity venture where they're going to give $10 million to fund businesses in this space. And so, of course, I ran my happy cell phone over there and started to pitch the hell out of them on this idea for this dispensary that focused on this demographic, but of course was open to everyone, that was really heavy on education. Our store was, going to be designed by terpene profile, because they want to understand how, you know, cannabis is going to affect them. How's it going to make them feel? How's it going to make their lives easier? And the whole place is going to be designed as a tea pad, and it's, you know, almost a speakeasy feel. So you come into a, a space and you have to use a password, and you go back into a secret tea pad, 1920s feel space. And I'm throwing it out there. And after a bunch of pitching, we got them on as our lead investor. So, and the company is, you know, Jay-Z is their, he's their chief, I think it's innovation officer. So yeah, he's a big part of their company. So I get to say, you know, Jay-Z is part of the lead investors for our company. And we opened Josephine and Billy's down on MLK in beautiful South Los Angeles at the end of October of 2021. So we've been open for about 4 months, just south of USC. So we're super excited to be one of the-
I got to get to the tea pad.
Yes, come on down to the tea pad. We're super excited to have, that space open. And we have, you know, a lounge in the back where we do community education, tea and terpenes, which is our- signature education event launches this month, where we serve tea and teach people basic, you know, cannabis 101 knowledge. What is CBD, THC, entourage effect? What is your endocannabinoid system? What is type 1, type 2, type 3 cannabis? Answering people's questions in a way that doesn't feel, you know, intimidating, because we want people to be able to feel comfortable when they're in the store. And that's what we've heard the most of, is that when people go into dispensaries, they feel intimidated. They're like, oh, you know, I got to get something and I got to get out. And, and I don't know what to ask.
I'm opposite of that. Like, I love going into dispensaries and just shooting the shit with people. Like, I feel like I'm educated, but there are a lot of things that I don't know. And I love asking the bud tenders, like, tell me about this. Tell me about the terpene profile on this. Tell me what would be good for, like, you know, a late afternoon pick me up, you know, because I'm like one of those people that, like, for some reason, cannabis impacts me different than most. So, like, it makes me very dumb. I hate to say it, but, like, that's why I don't generally smoke it ever during the day, because it just, I can't. There are people who are like, oh, I need it to focus and concentrate. I'm like, I don't. I'm just a dummy when it comes to like smoking during the day or even an edible. But so I love asking bud tenders, because, you know, there's all sorts of different products that are coming out, and you're even, you know, learning about a lot of things like THCV, which is like people are taking it for weight loss and, like, you know, more of a kind of like a natural Adderall, if you will. Right.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So I just love asking questions, because, you know, it makes me smarter. But I hear what you're saying. People are very intimidated, like, oh, I don't want to feel dumb, because everyone knows what they're already going to get. But I think that's, you know, that's important if you have that in your store. And I was reading that about you guys too. Like, you're all about, you know, the customer experience, right? And so
it's super important to us that people feel comfortable. And for us, you know, that means not having our product behind glass. You know, we want people to be able to touch product, that it's a boutique shopping experience. So, you know, you can go up to the shelves and pull things down and read the back of the package. You know, we don't want people to feel like, oh, I've got to, you know, get something and go. Our customers do have the tendency to come and stay a while. Come and, you know, wander the store, listen to the music, ask as many questions as you possibly can, because, you know, that's what our staff is there for. We want to build relationships with the community. And we do our very best to make sure that we have a variety of products in the store. Yeah, of course we have flower. Of course we have pre-rolls, but we make sure that, you know, we also have tinctures. We also have patches. We're going to have bath bombs. We're going to have lubes. We're going to have all those other products. So make sure that, you know, if you don't want to smoke, we have other ways that you can consume you know, medicate without having to smoke.
Love it. Love it. Let's talk a little bit. I know you mentioned it, you know, 10 minutes ago, really on the social equity side. And I think one thing that I would love for you to maybe shed some light on, because a lot of people are very interested in hearing more about social equity, but like, when I look at, you know, the process around social equity across the country, it's kind of broken and dysfunctional. And so I'm curious how you're actually navigating, you know, that entire landscape.
Oh, social equity. So I'm a huge supporter of social equity. I think that it is incredibly important. And so let's start there. Social equity is important and critical. I think what is most important that, you know, that we start out by framing it this way. Social equity has only been around, these programs have only been around for, you know, at the most 3 to 4 years. So what we're seeing is that we need to work on these programs. You know, they are not going to be in a place where they can be implemented and walk away from. They need work. They need the government or the municipalities that are implementing them need to be ready to pivot and make adjustments quickly when we see that things are not working. And that's what we've been pushing them to do. What has been, and that's kind of what, you know, as advocates, we've been out there pushing for. And what's been kind of driving us crazy is we get a lot of people who are saying, well, you know, social equity is a failure. Social equity is not a failure. Is California legalization a failure? That might be the case. And maybe not even legalization. California regulation is a failure. California regulation needs a lot of work. You know, social equity definitely needs work, but the programs still need to be in place. We just did, I'm a board member of Supernova Women. Supernova Women is a 501c3 that seeks to encourage Black and Brown people to become stakeholders in the cannabis industry. And we do that through education, advocacy, and networking. One of our big actions last year was that we partnered with Weed Maps and we commissioned a study done by Ecotone of the active social equity programs that are out there right now. And what we wanted to know is when a municipality is spending money towards social equity, what can a city expect to get back from it? You know, are these programs financially viable for cities? And what we learned was that for every dollar spent by a city on a social equity program, they will get back at least $1.20. At least $1.20. So they're making their money back and making, you know, and making money every time they spend that dollar. And if they make the program work, if they put the right pieces in place, i.e., they're doing technical assistance. They're offering loans and grants to the people who have who are in that program, and they're doing things like offering community kitchens. You know, opportunities for people to not have to have those heavy real estate lifts. Doing things like workforce development. Then they have the ability to, for every dollar, to make up to $4.50 back for every dollar they put in. So what that shows us is that when those programs are put together correctly, everyone wins. Unfortunately, what we know for sure is that municipalities are not good at being quick on the draw on making changes to things that aren't working. And when we saw that very clearly in Los Angeles, as somebody who was a social equity applicant and had to wait. You know, I applied for my license in September of 2019, and I was required to hold property in order to do so. And we did not open that store until 2021, which means that we spent 2 years paying rent on a property that we cannot make money on, in a program that is supposed to be for people who are disproportionately disenfranchised. that ends up being a money drain and it makes it impossible for people to be able to, once they have the ability to go ahead, they don't have the money to compete. And that's not workable.
So from a kind of 2022 outlook, you know, I know that you guys obviously launched at the end of last year. What are you most excited for as we kind of go into the heart of 2022?
Oh, goodness. There's so many things that I'm excited about. I'm excited about launching events. You know, for us, we really ideated a lot around events being a center portion of what we do at Josephine and Billy's. And then a little thing called COVID-19 came along and was like, no, you're not. Like, ruined everything for us. So now that, you know, we're finally calming down just a little bit, I'm so excited to be able to launch community-focused events, to be able to launch our tea and terpene events. We're going to launch our Girls Night Out events, to be able to launch First Sundays at J&B, to be able to allow community educators to come in and utilize our back room in order to host their own events that are cannabis centric and focused and have a place that they can have events within the community. You know, community education, I think, is so important. What mm-hmm. we know for sure, especially within these communities of color, is that they have less a lack of access to healthcare. And when they do have access to healthcare, the doctors are not listening to them as much. And so to be able to give cannabis education is important and it's critical within these communities. That's how we are able to help our community. That's how we are able to knock down a lot of stigma that still remains within these communities. So I'm extremely excited to be able to roll out our new slate of events for 2022.
I love it. Well, listen, I love everything that you're doing. Congratulations. And, you know, great story, amazing journey. I know you're going to crush it. And next time I'm in LA, I definitely want to come by and say hello.
Please
and,
do.
And try your stuff too. Love it. It looks like a fun place. So Whitney Beatty, CEO of Josephine and Billy's, thank you so much for coming on Alchemy.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.